It seems like accessibility has been all the buzz this year. Today on the podcast, I've got an expert who will share a few secrets. Welcome back to another episode of Design Today. I'm your host, Dylan Winspear, and we've got a great guest for you today. His name is Doug Collins. If you're a UX designer and you don't know the name, then you're probably not on Twitter. Why? Because Doug is the host of hashtag UX Talk. It's a daily Twitter chat, and he's very active in the design community. Before I get into the details of the show, I want to make another plug for the Design Today Slack community. This community has been one of the best things that's happened to me since quarantine. I found that since working from home, I miss out on a lot of socializing, and this Slack group fills that need for me. So you can sign up and receive your invite by visiting designtoday.com and going to the community page. After signing up, you can expect an invite in your email shortly after. Seriously, I love being able to talk shop with the people of the group. It's a great place to learn and network with talented people. Also, I wanted to let you know that I'm just a week or so away from launching the first course through Design Today. And are you ready for this? It's going to be free. That's right. This first course I'm releasing is a little course that shouldn't take you more than a few hours to complete. It's called the Resume Run-Through. And if you're in this group and you need to get your resume up to speed, this course is for you. Stay tuned and I'll give you another update next week. Okay, so back to Doug. You're going to learn a lot in this episode, even if you've been designing for 5+ years. You see, Doug is an accessibility expert and advocate. Additionally, he's got a course that he's willing to offer for free to the first 100 listeners who sign up. You can see those details in the show notes, and we talk a little bit about it at the end of the show. So this episode, it was recorded over winter break, so I've been anxious to air this one. It's a great one, so let's get it going. Great. Mr. Doug Collins, the Denver UXer.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. It's great to be here.
This is awesome. I'm glad we could get acquainted and get to know each other. We can thank the Twitter universe for making that happen.
Yeah, man, definitely. And you're like one of the only other few UX people I know that's actually in the Mountain Time Zone with me. So that makes scheduling these kind of things a lot easier.
That's true, actually.
We are the forgotten time zone.
Well, I appreciate you joining me. I know it's a late evening for both of us, but really looking forward to this topic. It's a topic that it's a hot topic, I think we could say. I don't know if I would call it trendy or not, but I think it's getting more and more exposure. We're going to get into some topics and themes talking about accessibility. But before we do that, why don't you give the listeners a little bit of introduction to who Doug Collins is and a couple of things that you're doing and what you've been up to?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started my UX career back in 2009 when I was actually a failed journalist. I had tried to be a sports reporter and things didn't work out too well and ended up having to work at a call center for Nordstrom Bank. And we had a really terrible sort of internal tool that our employees used. It was written in Front Page 2004, and this was 2009. So that's kind of your first hint that things weren't exactly well working there as far as tools that we had. So I started my UX career by working in between phone calls to create a tool that worked better for me to do my job, and then sharing mm-hmm. that and actually doing user research with all of my other colleagues, sharing the tool with them, that sort of thing. Ended up being able to pitch that tool to our C-level management and said, this looks great. Why aren't we doing it already? Go out and do it. And then from there, I've just kind of progressed my career through a number of different places. I worked for a company that did interactive digital signage for a while. So if you've ever gone to like a hotel that has one of those big touchscreens that tells you where the meeting rooms are or sort of where you can find breakfast, that sort of thing, did designs for anything from that all the way up to the big marquees you'd see on the Vegas Strip.
Cool.
And then from there, went into a company that did financial services that eventually got bought out by E-Trade. So worked for E-Trade for a little bit. And now I work for a company called Khaki International.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's a very different thing than what I've been doing leading up to this. Because directly before this, I was with E-Trade doing financial services stuff. Khaki works and produces software for the defense and intelligence communities. And they're right. All about being able to track down the bad actors. It's like the IMDb, really, of bad guys is kind of the product that I work on.
Sure.
So it's all about, trying to give intelligence analysts the tools that they need to be effective in helping to keep our country safe. So it's a very different change, but it's a really unique environment and some really unique security challenges. But along the way, I've been self-taught, and I've taught myself everything that I know with a lot of help from other people along the way. But one of the things that's always really interested me is accessibility. Uh-huh. You know, it's one of those things that, yeah, you know, you talk about it being a little bit trendy, and yeah, I think there is definitely a trend towards paying more attention to it, but that trend is rooted in the value that businesses get out of it. Because when you think about accessibility, there are so many people that suffer from some sort of accessibility issue that the return on investment for it is really quite good for businesses to go in and actually work on that.
Well, let me ask you, because speak high level, I assume that some of the listeners who are going to be listening to this podcast may not be familiar with the breadth of what accessibility actually covers. So give me some high level, what is accessibility?
Yeah, so accessibility is all about making a site or application usable for people that would have any sort of accessibility issue. When we think about accessibility, we have a few different types of accessibility sort of issues that we might sort of encounter. So you have people with visual accessibility issues, either low sight, no sight, or you know, just not very good things like color contrast, color vision, that sort of thing.
Right.
You have audio accessibility issues, people that can't hear well, and that could be manifested in a number of different ways. You also have things like psychological accessibility issues, people that are suffering from things like ADHD or anxiety disorders or that sort of thing. Also an accessibility piece. And then you have people that are just physically limited. You know, maybe they don't have good fine motor skills. Maybe they're missing an arm or a leg. And kind of when we talk about accessibility and we talk about all these different pieces, you know, we tend to think of someone with accessibility needs as somebody that's needing those permanently, right? So you think, okay, if you're born without an arm, you're always going to have some sort of accessibility need.
Sure.
But when I'm holding my 2.5-year-old son in one arm and my phone in the other, I'm as functionally able to use that phone as someone who was born without one arm. So there is a lot of that sort of what I call micro accessibility needs, people that experience those accessibility needs on a moment-to-moment basis. And that's where, you know, when we think about it from that approach, everybody is going to have some sort of accessibility need. And that's where the real value comes from as far as a business is concerned, is being able to say, you know, we aren't just catering to those customers that are permanently in need of accessible options. We're catering to everybody out there, all of our users.
Well, that's a good way of putting it. I haven't heard it described as an accessibility need. And I like your example of holding your kid in one hand and your phone in the other, because I think that's something that people can relate to, right?
Absolutely.
Where you're multitasking, or let's say you're on a softball team and you break your wrist, and that's going to keep your wrist immobilized for the next 3 months or something like that. You know, how do you continue to perform your job? You know,
right.
So there are these things that come up that would cause us to need more accessibility features to continue to working on as we might need.
Yeah, absolutely. And even when you think about, you know, even on just a very fleeting basis too, you know, if you're a construction worker working in a loud construction zone, you can hear, say, audio on a video, as mm-hmm. functionally as someone who was born deaf, right? And that may only last for a minute or two, but your need is still there. So being able to provide those solutions is a big win for any company that's trying to build a good customer base and build faith and loyalty in their customers.
So how can UX designers start to wrap their brains around accessibility improvements when it comes to a project that they're working on or a feature that they're working on, whether it be contract or full-time? How can they start to wrap their brain about, well, how do I look out for accessibility needs?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is a good set of guidelines out there for accessibility for websites. And it's mostly geared towards developers, but there's a lot in there for designers as well too. You'll hear these called the WCAG or WCAG guidelines. I think we're at version 2.1 right now. But these are essentially accessibility guidelines except set up by the W3C. That are essentially all the different things and pieces and tools that you can use to make sure that websites are fully accessible for all the different audiences. So going and just looking through those and getting a good understanding of sort of what those principles are is a really good first step. There are, and one of the things I can offer to you and to your listeners is a checklist of all the different things that are in those accessibility guidelines that are really geared towards the design side of things. Like I said, there's a lot that's in there for developers, and the total set is quite long, but you boil it down to just sort of the things that designers touch or can be cognizant of. It's a lot smaller and a lot easier to kind of wade through. And it really doesn't take as much effort, I think, is what many people understand. If you start with a good base of accessibility, it's not difficult to implement, but it's much easier if you start with it than trying to go back and fix things later on once you've realized that you maybe haven't done as good of a job with the accessibility as you might otherwise.
Yeah. Well, speak to that a little bit, because I think a lot of the times we are going to find ourselves in projects where they were started long before we came on board. And if the company doesn't necessarily put any emphasis on accessibility, where should someone begin?
Right. Yeah. So I think the big thing is just trying to get buy-in from the other people in the business, right? Because if you don't have buy-in, you're not going to be able to get anything done.
Right.
So it's important to make sure that you have those people behind you. And kind of, you know, apart from saying, you know, everybody has an accessibility need, you know, some things you can say to try and get buy-in, to get people to say, okay, this is something we need to move on. You know, some other statistics, about 1.3 billion people worldwide with a B have some sort of permanent accessibility need. So those are people that are permanently deaf, permanently hard of hearing, permanently blind, you know, one arm, you know, missing fingers, whatever it might be. So when you look from a permanent audience, that's one of your largest minority groups that's out there, as far as users are concerned. And when you think about, you know, that as well, you can also say, okay, if you look at just something like color blindness, which is one thing that we consider with an accessibility piece, 8% of men, give or take, suffer from some form of color blindness, and 1% of women also fall into that. So you're almost looking at almost 10% of your audience. If you do nothing but just address things from a color blindness and visual acuity perspective, you're helping out 10% of your audience, making it that much more easy and intuitive for that group of your audience to use. Yep. So if you could do something that affects 10% of your audience in UX, you usually do it, because the return on investment in that is really quite good. Yep. This is certainly one of those pieces you can definitely build a case for.
No, I think it's a great input, especially when it comes to starting the conversations with your executives. I've got a really good friend of mine who's colorblind, and I didn't know this when I first met him. And one of the first few times we hung out together, we were at his house for a barbecue. Mm-hmm. And this is one of my favorite stories with this guy. He and I are sitting in the back. He's flipping burgers. And he says to me, as I'm staring at these burgers, recognizing how dried out they're starting to look and how dark they're starting to look, he said, "By the way, I'm colorblind. I don't know when these are done or not. So let me know."
Oh no. That's not good, man. That's not a good sign.
I just remember laughing the whole time. I was like, "Oh, okay. Well, that's the case. They're done. They were done about 5 minutes ago."
Maybe put them in charge of the chicken next time. That might be a little bit easier.
Anyways, it's just funny because, again, you know, you might not think that you've got somebody who, you might not feel close to some of these accessibility needs, but I'm sure based off your percentages and your numbers that you're sharing, I would probably assume that more people are close to somebody with some sort of accessibility need. It's probably not as distant as you might think. So it's a good perspective to maintain.
Well, and especially when you think about things like cognitive issues, things like ADHD, things like anxiety and depression, and even learning disabilities. Those aren't types of things that people talk about a lot. There's a stigma around them. I myself have suffered from generalized anxiety for years, and I talk about it because I try and take away some of that stigma. But those are things that people struggle with, and struggle with largely silently, because it's, you know, shameful to say, or at least some people think it's shameful to say that those are issues.
Sure.
You know, even things like dyslexia is one of those things that's really hard to admit. It's also something I've struggled with too. I didn't realize I had a dyslexia problem until I was working for a phone company, cell phone company. I was selling cell phone contracts and kept flipping numbers in the phone number, which meant that I didn't get paid for that contract when I turned it in. So it's one of those things. They might not even know that they have an accessibility issue, but it's there. And anything that you can do to sort of make things easier for them is really going to pay dividends.
Yeah. One of the things that I see businesses think down the lines of is actually very similar to how a business might think of usability testing, that it's time consuming and expensive.
Right.
How would you address a business that says accessibility is time consuming and expensive?
Well, first off, if you do it right, and if you do any design right from the ground up, it's a lot easier, right? It's much easier to say, okay, even if, you know, we've built an entire website from here and we're going back, we're just making some new features or that sort of thing. It's much easier to say, let's do this right from the beginning so that we don't have to go back and fix these pieces and invest that time later. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we don't talk about enough in the UX world, I think, is UX debt. There's this concept of tech debt that's out there, right? So if your code, you know, is slowly getting older and older, and your site is slowly getting older and older, and the technology is built on getting older and older, it's going to take more time to fix that as that builds up. Accessibility is one of those big pieces of UX debt. It wasn't something that was focused on, but it's one of those things, the longer you wait on it, the more it's going to take to get that up and running. So yeah, it might be a little bit expensive, especially if you have a larger project, but again, it pays dividends, and to start doing it right costs nothing. You can always say, you know what? Whatever is done in the past is done in the past, but we're going to do things right from this point forward. And even if you just start there, it's a starting point. And that's a way to sort of get it on people's radar, start thinking about it, and then to go back and look and say, okay, what changes are we making in this feature or with this piece that we could implement elsewhere, take across our code base? And you start to kind of build those pieces up. And yeah, it might take some time, but it's worth it. And it's something that you can certainly approach in very similar methods that you approach to eliminating tech debt as well.
Sure. So let's get into some maybe of the nitty gritty specifics. What does accessibility in UX design look like when you're working on a mock or when you're working on a feature? What does it actually look like? What should you be considering?
Yeah, right. Absolutely. So you really want to be thinking about those different pieces we were talking about, the visual pieces, the audio pieces, the cognitive psychological pieces, and the physical pieces when you're going through things. Some of these are just good practices and really things that we should be doing anything. So things like color contrast, right? Yep. So we say that we want to have a 5-to-1 color contrast ratio. For a lot of people, that doesn't mean anything, but there are a lot of different websites out there that you can use that will check contrast between two colors that you use. So for instance, your yellow text on a black background is the highest contrast that you can get. You might be surprised here that's not white on black. It's actually, or black on white. It's actually yellow on black. And that's the highest contrast ratio that you can achieve. Those colors are so different that they're very easy to see, very easy to distinguish from each other. That is called a high contrast ratio. When you're talking about, say, like a light gray text on a white background, or a light blue text on a gray background, those are very difficult to see. Those are low contrast pieces. So you really want to stay at that sort of 5-to-1 contrast ratio. And if you're not sure, just again, Google contrast ratio checker. Yep. And there's hundreds of tools out there that'll do that for you.
If you're all right with me interrupting you real quick, one of the things that I've done with my teams, and I'm sure there's probably a principle around this or in someone's curriculum somewhere, but I always just called it the squint test, right? If you're looking at a mock, squint your eyes a little bit, and if things disappear, you've got contrast issues.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, that's one of the things that, you know, if the text disappears when you see that, yeah, you've got problems. It's also good just from a good overall design perspective, because you do want to have good sort of page contrast. It's just visually appealing and pleasing. So yeah, and it helps that my eyesight's starting to go a little bit. I'm not that old, but I am squinting a lot more, so I'm getting more of the contrast.
That's funny.
But yeah, definitely, man. Absolutely. And it's a great way to check for that.
Talk to me about like font sizing. How does that play a role in the design process?
Well, so font sizing is going to be a little bit different. And again, there are font size standards that are out there in the WCAG guidelines. I don't have them in front of me at the moment, so I kind of can't give you the exact numbers for that. Definitely go check that. It's definitely in the WCAG under their font and text pieces. But yeah, you do want to make sure that you're not making text too small. Mm-hmm. You do want to make sure that's readable. And one thing that I should tell you is that these types of the things are not overly difficult to test as well. You know, some of these things, you know, that we talk about, like font size, that sort of thing. Okay, if you adhere to best practices, you can go ahead and make sure that those are kind of standard. Even other things like some of the navigational pieces and that sort of thing are very easy to test as well too. But yeah, you definitely want to make sure that your font sizes are not too small and are absolutely readable, because again, it's not only just a thing with people with visual acuity problems, but it also can be a thing for somebody that has a learning disability, straining and adding cognitive load to have them read and try and decipher small text. It's only going to make things more difficult for them.
That's a great point. You know, one of the things that I see a lot of designers struggle with early in their careers, and I don't know if this is a habit that they picked up on when they were in like grade school, But everyone loves to use 12-point text, whether it be on a website or an app. Like 12-point font is where they start. And I wonder if it's just like, well, when I was writing my Word documents, it was 12-point Times New Roman. And that's just like their starting line. But 12-point is oftentimes far too small.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Absolutely. And the line spacing, too, is another thing that kind of creeps in there, too. Mm-hmm. Usually you're at like a line and a half line spacing, 1.5 is kind of a good space. But yeah, for me, I know that the 12-point thing definitely came from Microsoft Word when I started writing papers back in, you know, the Stone Age. But yeah, it still feels weird for me sometimes to see even 11-point text defaulted. It feels wrong in so many different ways.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's kind of the default text. Yeah, but that's so small. And really, there, you have to kind of think of things not only in the perspective of, does this design look good, but is it going to function well? And I think that's where accessibility really fits in with UX design. Because, yes, we want things to look good, but we're not the UI guys. We're really about having things function well and accomplish user goals and fit user needs. That's really what accessibility is all about.
Yeah. Well, then I think down that same vein would also be the thought of, like, when you're designing an app or you're designing a website and the components you're developing, recognizing that typically the hardware that people are using have their own accessibility settings. And users had the opportunity to bump up the font size. And if your components aren't going to be flexible enough for that type of thing, your app might not actually function the way you intended it to function based upon this one little setting.
Right, absolutely. And while things like font size definitely can play a role in that, you know, there are other different accessibility hardware pieces out there that we don't think about nearly as much. So things like screen readers, right? Mm-hmm. So a screen reader is something that someone with visual issues might use to actually read the content of a page out to them. They have some of their own unique sort of accessibility needs that we can check for and help design for as UX professionals. That don't get thought of a whole lot, and I don't think get discussed nearly often enough.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I've seen a couple of people on my team do is actually find some of those resources for, like, screen readers, and actually try and play with their product only using one of those screen readers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And the frustration is just rampant. And I think that also helps people kind of develop the empathy for the people who are using the product and might have that accessibility need.
1,000%. If you are ever having difficulty telling someone that your website is not accessible, download a screen reader for them and let them go. because 99 times out of 100, that's all the persuasion they need. Screen readers, yeah, exactly. Screen readers are a little bit difficult to get used to if you never used them before. So that, you know, maybe playing a little bit of the trick to your advantage there. But once you get used to using a screen reader, people that actually use screen readers on a regular basis are really much faster about navigating through websites than people who are doing things visually. So it becomes a very interesting piece. And especially if you find somebody that has experience testing with screen readers, you can really start to get some interesting results from that, really see how well accessibility really aids people with visual issues navigating through your site or app.
Yeah, that's interesting. Is there any other components that you can think of that designers should be considering as it comes to the specifics of accessibility in design?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that I always like to talk about is an audio piece, especially when we're talking about captioning. So whenever we have a video out there, obviously audio is a big part of that. And this is also true with podcasts. And one of the things that we talk about a lot in sort of the podcasting world is making a transcript available that tells exactly sort of who's talking, what they're saying, sort of the timing between that. You know, on the video side of things, when you have audio going, there are a couple different types of captioning that you can do, right? You can have closed captioning, which the user can turn on and say, okay, I want to see captions over the bottom of the screen, kind of what we're all used to on TV, that sort of thing. Or you can have open captioning, which is essentially the captions are built into the video. They're hard-coded. You can't turn them on or off. They're there as well. But sort of at some level, you need to make sure that you have an option for somebody with audio issues to be able to digest that content. So whether you're doing it through open captioning, closed captioning, or transcripts, kind of a big piece there to keep in mind, make sure that you're making that accessible. And really, that's something that's a lot easier now than it used to be, especially with all the tools out there that are automated to try and help make that easy. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of different tools out there that you can use to really sort of speed up that process for you.
That's good to know. Can you share with us a little bit, a couple of those tools that you're referencing or maybe resources that people can go and check out?
Yeah. So I'll tell you what I do. I have a couple of different pieces. So I actually, this isn't something I'm trying to pump my own class on this here, but I actually did,
I did a class. Shameless plugs are welcome.
Yeah. I tried to stay away from them. But in this case, since I have a class that I made on this that we talk about for accessibility, so there are two pieces that I have with that, that I want to make available for people that are listening to your podcast.
Okay.
One is the WCAG, WCAG designers checklist that essentially gives you the list of sort of the things that you can look at. And not that you should rely on that checklist, but it's a good starting point. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of relying on checklists, but it's good to kind of start and kind of review things. The other thing is a tool resource kit. So I've put together a whole bunch of different links to different sites that I've gone and used through in the past, three or four different tools for everything from, you know, captioning software to things like the contrast checkers and sort of other technical pieces in there. So that way, you know, I can give you three or four different options for each of these and they can kind of go in and kind of see which ones work well for them. I want to do that both for a couple of different reasons. The first being, sorry, I'm getting a Slack message while I'm doing this. That's probably not very professional of me. Let me shut that down. Mike Gallers, if you're listening to this, I will respond back to you later at some point. but yeah, so definitely make sure that everybody has access to those. But I want to make sure I'm doing that partly because I feel very passionately about that. And partly because I have 20 or 30 different tools that I have kind of in that list. And
okay.
So some of the exact names are escaping me. But yeah, they're definitely a few options in that toolkit and make sure that everybody has access to those.
Cool. And if you can send me over those links, I'll make sure to include them in the description and the comments so that people can check those out. They can check out your resources. My hope in having this conversation with you is obviously we've spoken pretty high level on accessibility.
Right.
But for a lot of people, this is going to be their entry point into considering accessibility in their design. Mm-hmm. So what I want to do is, again, we just kind of scratch that surface. I'd love for the listeners to check out the links that you'll send over and we'll include in this episode. And then maybe in the future, we should do a follow-up episode and really get into some more fine details.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a lot that you could talk about with any of these pieces and really go in depth with them. So certainly some good options there. And really a lot to talk about. You could do a whole podcast on, you know, visual, audio, psychological, physical, all the different sort of technologies and ins and outs of each one. So there's a lot there, and absolutely we can definitely dive into that. And, you know, one of the things I'll do too is I'll put out space for 100 of your listeners to get the class for free. So I'll send you a link to that too. So the first,
now you got people
that you have
heard,
right,
listening,
yeah,
up.
Exactly. So the first 100 listeners, and also if you try and get that class for free and you can't get it for free, you can shoot me a message, doug@denveruxer.com. I'll make sure that you get in there, but I'll open it up at least for 100. And then if we have more beyond that, I want to make sure all your users get that for free because it's something I feel very passionately about.
That's great.
And I don't care so much about making the money off of it. I just want to get the knowledge out there for people.
That's fantastic. And I appreciate that. And I'm sure they will as well. Right. I also plug that if they want to get in touch with you, you're very active on Twitter.
yeah. Absolutely.
So I will plug that they should try and look up, what's your actual handle on Twitter?
I'm Doug Collins UX, DougCollinsUX. You can also find me, if you can't, you know, have problems finding me on Twitter, you can search for Doug Collins. Ignore the Republican congressman from Georgia. he's much before me. I'm getting up there in the ranks of Doug Collins's. Fortunately, the Doug Collins basketball coach doesn't have a Twitter fit that I know of, so that's good. You can also go to denveruxer.com, find links to all my social media stuff going on there too, along with links to other podcasts and writing and all the other stuff that I get involved with as well.
That's awesome. And you've got a course coming out soon as well. Is that what you're working on, or is it a book coming out soon?
Yeah, so it's a couple of different things. So I am working on a course right now on dark patterns.
Mm.
So I'm going to put this out as an ebook. I'm going to put it out as an online learning course, and I'll probably end up doing a podcast series on that as well too at some point in time, although that's down the road. But yeah, it's something, another one of those things that I found myself being very passionate about, wanting to learn more about and educating myself and thinking, okay, I've got a lot here that I can pass on and really help people understand sort of what they are Dark patterns just annoy me so much. And for anyone that doesn't really know what they are, they're essentially the tricks that designers use to get us to do things that we wouldn't normally do on our own.
Right.
So to make those decisions that aren't really in our best interest. And there are a number of different patterns behind that and sort of design pieces behind that. But there's also a lot of psychology behind it. So the class and the book really explore both the patterns themselves, but also the psychology behind them as far as what makes them work and why they're actually effective.
Cool.
Working on that right now, hoping to have that out, feverishly writing away every night, trying to get that done.
That's fantastic. So we'll stay tuned and listen closely for any word on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it. And, you know, if anybody has any thoughts or questions about that, feel free to hit me up and I'm happy to chat about anything UX, but particularly dark patterns, accessibility, those sort of things are right in my wheelhouse and always something I feel fun, comfortable talking about.
Great. Thanks so much, Doug, for joining. You've shared a lot of great insight, a lot of good takeaways, and again, some free resources for those who have listened and checked these things out. So much appreciated. Again, I'll plug everyone to go look up Doug, find him on Twitter, and take advantage of some of those opportunities. So Doug,
yeah,
thank you
absolutely.
Very much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been a great time. And, we'll keep in touch and circle back around, do another one of these. And be looking forward to it. Thanks so much for your time.
That's fantastic. That's the wrap on Design Today. Thanks for listening.